accession number 22658, Reel 7.
This is the fourth reel of a taped interview with Norden Digby in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 5th of the 9th, 2001, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Norden, we were talking about the brigade box. What was your involvement with that?
As far as the regiment was concerned, in the first instance, it would supply only one battery at a time to take part in the Hom Desert brigade box, which I understand it was titled Four Glass. 11 battery was the first battery to move into that position, to be followed by 10 battery. I'm not too sure about the actual time taken for the actual program, but we still carried on with our particular training, although we were minus guns and transport. But during that time, apparently Rommel was moving towards the Egyptian border, and the fall of Tobruk occurred some time in June. That when the news reached Basama, that was a camp outside Tripoli, in which the whole regiment was stationed, that it was a disaster, and it was felt extremely badly by those fellows in the regiment that had been involved in the Tobruk siege. There was some talk about a surrender, but I'm not too sure about that fact. But
what about those people that hadn't been involved? How did that news affect those people?
Well, I mean, by the time the reinforcements, or of our particular reinforcements, we were quite acclimatised to what had happened to in Tobruk by the members that were there, and we were likewise it was a disaster. That's what we all thought about it at the time, and I know of several of the senior NCOs and like it really knocked them around a bit, but the point was, well, we just had to carry on.
What did it mean, the fact that Tobruk had fallen? What did it mean to the Greater Army?
Well, I think because they had virtually been there for 6 months and held the Axis forces at bay and fairly successfully, within a short time, whoever the defenders were, I'm not too sure what to say in regards to that. The point being that there was talk about a surrender. So when you talk about surrenders and that, it was really hard to take after what you would have thought for the the achievement by yourselves or for the division and the other Allied forces that were in Tobruk at the time?
Falls of Tobruk, June 21st of 42. What was the result? What then happened? And how quickly did it happen?
Well, bearing in mind that we all knew of the withdrawals, which were usually classified either way, as the Benghazi handicaps or a description of that type, we could imagine that there'd be, in other words, pretty close to chaos in the withdrawal, because it was only the one way down by the main road, and a sort of matter with transport plus the possibilities of the air attack, because the Axis had a supremacy of the air at the time, so they would have been harassing the transport, and also at the same time the commanders would be endeavouring to withhold positions try and stabilise the withdrawal and to endeavour to stop the Axis forces.
Mm.
So we had a fair idea that it was going to be a problem.
What was your knowledge of what you were going to be doing as a result of the successes that the Germans were making further up the desert?
At the time, we weren't too sure whether there was any indication that we'd be involved in it, but it was pretty obvious it would, in hindsight. The only way would be for us to have to move down through the Sinai Desert to Egypt, and then take up some holding defence position prior to the Rommel getting past Alamein or in that particular area. But basically, we didn't know too much about the name of Alamein until we actually went into action.
Mm. So what then happened? When you started to move, what were your thoughts? You were a bit uncertain as to where you were going.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah. Well, of course, with any movement at the time was the furfies would be running hot, and
do you recall what some of those might have been?
Some coming back to Australia, which was impossible, but all various sorts of rumours that were concocted around the place. But I think generally we knew that we'd have to be a part of the next move. And
so what was involved in that move?
Well, by that time, by the time of our actual moving, Levin Battery would have had to come back. And when they did come back to Basama, their equipment was handed over to us on the theory that we were going to go back to the Homs Desert. But then orders start to come through where we had to remove her identification of, that were pardon me, Australians. Their colour patches had to be removed, the Australia badges had to be removed, removed it, anything that supposed to not make us be recognised as Australians. But
why was it important not to be recognised as Australians?
Well, it may have been some thought that the Axis intelligence may have got information that the Australians were coming down, and if they considered, well, they'd have some fair idea that they have a reasonable sort of force to engage upon, but that's only just my opinion. But the humorous part about it was that all our gear and like personal gear and that was taken away from us, and of course the local inhabitants were always around, you know, had free access through our camping areas and that, and of course they knew there was some movement on, and we in our trying to camouflage our identity, which is a bit ridiculous, but they said, well, what about your brand boots? And that was the end of that, because the British forces had black boots and ours were brown, ankle brown. So that wouldn't have taken too long for the Germans to know that the move was on. So, well, we were all set up to move off with the necessary equipment to go into action, and within a very short time, it may have been a day, that we moved off and down to on our way south through the Sinai Desert. And I know at night time, it was night time when we were there, we were still on the move, but there was a regulated stop for a while for the sake of the troops and the vehicles and that. And it was on this occasion that somewhere, somehow, some overproof rum was issued to us. Well, it's the first time I'd ever tried rum. And I think we had tin pannikins or something of that nature to drink it out of. And it was mighty powerful. But, of course, we didn't get too much of it, so it didn't have any effect apart from warming us up a bit. So from there on, we continued on a southward journey, and then eventually, I'm not too sure of the timing of it, we arrived at Amaria, just outside Alexandria.
What did the convoy consist of?
Well,
coming down, were you marching? Were you
No. We were all on our, each gun crew had its own truck. That'd be roughly five gunners and one plus a driver. That refers to just one gun, the establishment of the gun, whereas there's for a battery there's 16 guns plus all the other attachments, battery headquarters, the quartermaster, the signalers, artificers. But we travelled in convoy with other units, which I can't really describe what was that, but it was quite a lengthy convoy, and I mean, of course, there's all the regulations of convoy distances and things like that between vehicles, and
what was the convoy distance between vehicles?
Or
would it have to be?
I'd say it would be, in theory, 20 to 30 metres apart. But if you're the last vehicle in the convoy, which we were, what with the movement up and down and the varying speeds trying to keep convoy distance, well, we were up the end, so in the end we just didn't bother about it, we just speed up because there'd be a laid down mileage per hour for the vehicles. So in the end we just couldn't, if we didn't bother about the distance, we just have to speed up to catch them because what's the description? Jockey up and down.
What was the general feeling in the convoy?
Oh, I think the spirits were pretty high. That was a job that had to be done, and there was no way we were going to get out of it. So you might as well just take it as it is. But as we were coming through, I'm not too sure about this, but there was, I didn't see it, but there was a bit of hostility by some of the Egyptians because they were pro-Nazi, and of course we had to be pretty careful. It showed up more so in the when we came back out of the Alamein, but I just can't say that we ran into any hostilities going through to Amaria. But from once we got to Amaria, we were then directed into forming a line of defence, and our guns were sighted around appropriate areas in a defensive manner.
What was the feeling in Amaria then?
It'd be about the same as like coming down through the Sinai and that. But of course what happened then was that they were taking fellows out of the troops to form what they call LOB, that's left out of battle, which is meant for, let's say, a unit is wiped out or partially wiped out. At least they did have a means of experienced people who could easily train and form up a similar unit.
What, was that a popular thing to get?
No.
Well, be left out of battle?
Not particularly. Because lots of the people wanted to be with the rest of the group and not end up a shiny bum or something like that. And so, well, what happened? I lost a bombardier, so I had to take basically, I was a section sergeant, so I was responsible for two guns, and each had an NCO in charge of. Well, when I lost one of them, a bombardier, I had to look after the second and take his place, sort of business. Mm. And I think we must have been lost another one. Not absolutely sure of this, but I ended up with two fellows, replacements that had come from some other unit from somewhere, which was the normal procedure when they wanted reinforcements or there was a problem in filling gaps and that. Well, they just out of training camps or hospital, people coming out of hospitals and things like that, they'd just transfer them into. Now, these two that I got, had never seen a gun, wouldn't know anything about a gun, so we just had to try and do our best in a short time for them to understand what was going on, and which could basically mean nothing. So,
was the level of panic that you were to see on your way up to your final position?
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned before about the Benghazi handicapped situations, when we were to move forward to the Alamein or Tel Eliza area, there's just a continuous stream of vehicles of all sorts, ambulances, canteen trucks, 2-pounder guns, and things of that nature, and they sort of commandeered the main part of the road. It was only basically a single lane highway, or probably two could pass, but they commandeered most of the road, and we'd probably have to get off the side on occasions. And of course, when they stopped, they were stopped and starting all the time. And I remember particularly we stopped alongside an anti-tank regiment, or members of an anti-tank regiment, and they called out to, "What size guns have you got?" We said, 2-pounders. Well, they just said, "Well, you can write yourself off." That was very pleasing. That was a great help. Because the 2-pounders were, they really only had an effective range of about 300 or 400 yards. When you bear in mind the tanks that they were light vehicles, would be 800 yards or something of that nature. But with the Panzer divisions and 50 millimetre guns and 75 millimetre gun on tanks, they could stand off twice. 2,000 yards, and all we had to protect ourselves was about a half inch of plate. So
how did you feel going up to write yourself off?
Well, we didn't feel too happy about it, but we were on the road and there was no way we could go. But
at this point, you're realising that you're actually going to see some action.
Oh, yeah, there was no doubt about that, because The further we got up, we got into the gunfire area. Distance, you could hear them and things like that. And of course, the next move was for reconnaissance parties to go up and survey the area in which was basically or roughly allotted to us. And of course, the troop commander and one of the, I don't know who else went with, I didn't. It might have been the right section sergeant that went. So they did a reconnaissance of the area, you know, from off the top of the ridge. They didn't get down in, I don't think. They wouldn't have.
I would have assumed that there was a certain degree of uncertainty going on in your mind as to what the Germans were actually like.
Yeah.
How did that affect the troops? The fact that they didn't quite know what they were in for?
I think there are three on the gun that I was in charge of. There was nobody there with any battle experience at all, so you can imagine how some of them felt. You didn't know about it, but they wouldn't have been too pleased about it as we got nearer to the gunfire. But that was our particular situation, and. As far as myself was concerned, when we did start the move down down towards the flat, towards Chilliwaza, I was saying a few prayers, and then I realised that I didn't have to have a smoke. When we got down on the flat, we were starting to hammer us with air bursts and things of that nature, so you didn't have any time to think about anything else but to try and look after yourself and me in particular and the rest of them. But of course the big mistake that we made was that the guns were mounted on the tray, the tray of the truck, which is called a porte. It meant that when we got down the flat, there was no use having the damn thing up on the truck. So we had to get it down. And of course, there's a special drill to get the things down. Of course, I've got two new fellas who didn't know anything about how to get it off the damn truck. So. We got it off somewhere or other, so and never went back again, sort of business. That was tied into the positions, and whilst all this was going on, we were under artillery fire.
Can you describe what it's like to be under artillery fire for the first time?
We'd had a sort of a grounding about World War One and the air bursts and mini waffers and all that sort of stuff from the old soldiers and that. So we had an idea what, and these, of course, these air bursts, they sort of crack out over the top of you and that. Belch out black smoke and ironmongery with it. But that sort of fitted in to the stories we'd been told by the old World War One folks, when we had a number of them in our unit. But that part was, you just wondered whether you could stand up to it, sort of business. And
well, in your position, you're actually looking after the other blokes as well.
Yeah, so there was two of us, two guns I had to look after. Well, there's four guns in the troop, so the right and left sections, that's two guns to a section. And, of course, then the situation was that we had to do a reconnaissance to get our guns in position.